Paco is your first feature. Tell me about the inspiration for its wild and wacky framing.
Well, basically, I've been working in the film industry since 2014. One of my first, I guess, filmmaking friends was Manny, who is Paco Manny in the film. And at the time, he was a sound recordist. And we ended up working on a lot of short films and different projects together and kind of experiencing the freelancer filmmaking lifestyle in Adelaide. And when I was finishing my studies at Flinders University, we had an experimental course and we had to make an experimental film. And I really got hooked on this idea of separating, I guess, the camera from the audio equipment and actually seeing the microphone in shot, and kind of how that affects your experience. So I made an original short version back in 2016, which was Manny following a man giving a long monologue up a hill. And then ever since the ideas kind of stuck around, and then started slowly developing it into a feature full of, I guess, stories surrounding that freelancer experience.
In fact, it has a certain Buster Keaton sort of element to it, doesn't it? And or a
Yes.
a Monsieur Hulot or Monty Python's.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we watched Playtime, I think, a couple of weeks before the shoot, because I think we just were both trying to find something to get on the same wavelength. Because I think Manny himself is such a particular character, and he's before this film, he would have said he's not an actor, but I think Manny is a very interesting performer, and I think kind of finding ways to kind of have that silent Buster Keaton-esque protagonist, in a role really, really worked for him. Massive
And
influence.
also the business about bringing 100 local cast and crew in. I mean, it really is a love affair with the creatives of South Australia or Adelaide, right?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, I've been working in this industry for a while and worked pretty much mostly in Adelaide, and it's just one of the greatest communities to be a part of. And putting this film together was just calling around, seeing who was available, and everybody was really willing to be a part of the project. And I think it kind of the project's kind of grown with that. Like it wasn't my intention to be like, this is a showcase of everything. It was just like, this is a story about Manny's experience as a freelancer, and here are all these wacky things that happened to him. But gradually it grew and grew as more people got involved, and you kind of really, I guess, connect with everyone. That I realized towards the end of, I guess, scripting and putting it together, that another massive influence was the Muppets. I think the Muppets would be a big influence on the film, because that is about a big, wacky group of people coming together and singing a big song together at the end as well. But yeah, that's a big key to, I guess, the theme of the film as well as.
People have to be aware that it's got a beginning and a middle and an end, but it's really a long journey between end of a shooting day and the loss of a radio mic, and Manny trying to get that back. And one of the things that's really fascinating about it, as you said, it dislocates the sound from the, it goes wandering off, and we keep hearing a whole range of stuff. And because I do a lot of radio, the amount of in jokes involved in that sound exploration and montage is really amusing, actually.
That's great.
You had a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you. It's, I guess, a big film for the sound community as well. But yeah, I think it's such an interesting relation we have with sound in film. It's often the thing that goes unnoticed, and that's, I guess, by design for most films. And yeah, really shining a spotlight on it and making sure you can see the microphone or you can't see the microphone and you don't know where it is in the beginning, I think, really creates an interesting effect for the audience.
Oh, even down to the fact that he does the thing that I do quite a bit, which is think, oh, I should have a mic to be able to pick up that sound. So he stops while and does folio, collects folio
Yeah.
items. I love it.
Yeah, you collect some of the worst Foley I think ever recorded.
Yeah,
The post-production sound recorder said it's the worst Foley.
it also is very absurdist too. The man who comes out of the sea is a nice touch, I'll have to say. That's very Monty Python, I'll have to say.
Yeah, very Monty Python touch. Yeah, he came with that monologue prepared. He needed very little direction from me.
So does that mean that a variety of the people who get to do pieces, like the person who does the self-referential party piece about filmmaking and filmmakers, did they could contribute them themselves? Did they create those pieces themselves?
So it's a real mix. That one was actually in the script, but the script was only about 20 pages long. So I wrote it just to kind of have a framework for the film because I wanted a lot of it to be improvisational because there were a lot of people playing certain characters. And I was like, you can perform this better than I can, write it for you. So then I had more of an idea of like figuring out what the scene's going to be, how do we get in, how do we get out. We workshop the scenes on the day. We'd film it a few times. I think a big factor of the way that we filmed it was that I was so far away with the camera, and Manny actually plugged into his recording device was a radio mic attached to me, so that I could give Manny directions during the shot of how to interact with people, or even if it was too far for me to walk, I would get Manny to direct people on my behalf and tell them where to stand and what to do. But yeah, most of it is improvisational. I don't think anybody prepared specific pieces on the day. I think other than pieces of music, a lot of it was very improvised, but based on quite a structured script.
Yeah, okay. And bringing in the music, you actually do introduce a band who is The Empty Threats, which is a nice piece, isn't it?
Oh, it's wonderful. Empty Threats are one of the greatest bands in Adelaide. Such a great live band as well. So yeah, it was a privilege to have them involved in the film. And they were very, very game, even though with the improvisational and scatterbrained nature of the shoot, they had no idea what was going on or what part of the film they're in. They just rocked up and did their thing. So yeah, it was really, really lovely to have them involved. That's a great song.
It's a lovely song. The other thing was that in that one of the sequences, you had a lot of video. What is it? Slide, coloured slides going. That's also another aspect of creative South Australia, quite clearly, someone's artistic pursuit.
Oh, thank you. No, that is his Instagram handle is Chicken Crimpy Party.
That was quite impressive.
Oh, it's brilliant. So he often does Ryan Saab. Ryan Saab is his name. He will often do VJ work for The Empty Threats. So he pre-prepared a few pieces and put that together for us. He's really, really talented. It was great to explore so many different artistic pursuits. Like we have Jasmine Crisp, who's like a brilliant painter in the film as well. Yeah, we tried to kind of encapture as many different artists as we could.
Now, you're known as an Australian comedy duo, apparently, Tim and Tim, and the other part of Tim is Tim Hodgkinson, who put together the money, which is $30,000. So you came up with a great result, really, didn't you, for a little amount of money?
No, we put in a few grant applications. So the film wouldn't exist basically without the Helton Academy and the Hannon Larson Fellowship, which are both SA-based grants. It really gave us the impetus to finish the film. Adelaide Film Festival is involved in the Hannon Larson, so they basically gave us a due date to finish the film by.
Which is very handy.
So it's really handy. I don't know how people operate without due dates. I live and die by them. But yeah, no, it was a pleasure working with Tim. Two Tims make a wonderful team. He was doing so much behind the scenes work because we shot the most of the film in 7 days. And that was going out and filming and then coming back and then rescheduling and calling people up and saying, are you still available tomorrow? You're not available. Let's see who else is available. Let's restructure this. Let's change this character. So it was a really like intense job, but it was a lot of fun. And important to have a partner in crime when you're doing something like that.
Yeah, I guess so. And I suppose the editing phase would have been interesting as well.
That was really good. Again, with such a short amount of time, what again, kind of what you see in the film is that I really love collaborating and working with people. And then having such a short deadline to kind of present the film, I basically ended up having to edit it myself because there's a lot of communication that kind of happens. And it's the best part of filmmaking is that communication where you set up the tone and the narrative of the film. And it was such a specific idea that I had because I was out filming the whole thing as well. So I knew kind of how everything should be pieced together. So it was, it was a really fast process editing it, but really enjoyable. And it's interesting because even now, like you say, directors and editors, you watch a film hundreds and hundreds of times. And because it happens so fast, even now, seeing it at screenings, there are still things that I think I missed, and I didn't notice what a specific performance somebody was doing in the background or other little like threads of someone's performance. So I think that's made it like an extra enjoyable experience in the long run that it's still a film that I can comfortably go back to and not be like, oh, I made this mistake or I wish that we'd gotten this or wish that I'd gotten that. I can still really find a lot of joy in it, and seeing friends perform and do funny things.
Well, chaos and improvisation, they are the key. You found yourself
They are.
And you found yourself a distributor, a Pinnacle from the Gold Coast, which is fascinating. And they've doing some screenings around the country. I rather like the touch. It's what is it, cinema and beer screenings?
So Pinnacle have come on board, which is really wonderful. They get the film, which is great, and have been so supportive. So what they have set up is a sponsorship with Pirate Light, a brewery in Adelaide, to make some of the country's finest beer. And basically, we've got five screenings around the country at the moment. In Melbourne on May 6th, Brisbane on May 7th, Adelaide on May 8th, Sydney May 9th, and Hobart on May 10th. And at each of those screenings, each ticket comes with a complimentary Pirate Life. You get craft beer and what Pinnacle are calling craft cinema. I'll call it craft cinema.
What's not to like, right?
I think it's a good fun film, and especially accompanied by a beer, I think it's a good night out. And Melbourne is what I'm calling the Jacinta Allan because it will be the Victorian premiere of the film.
It's at the Lido, which is great, which is a it's a good venue.